It's your Handy Ham World Weekly e-letter for the week of Wednesday, the 11th of June, 2014. This is Pat Tice, WA0TDA, from the Courage Kenny Rehabilitation Institute's Handy Ham program. Welcome to Handy Ham World. Picking a daisy. No, we're not picking flowers today. DAISY refers to Digital Accessible Information System, the worldwide standard for accessible talking books. The current National Library Service, or NLS for short, player, has reached about as close to 100% penetration here in the United States as it's going to, and the remaining four-track cassette tape players are no longer actively supported. I have to admit that I don't miss a lot of stuff about the old tape system. The tangled or broken tapes, the shoebox full of cassettes for really long books, the way the tapes would get out of order and mess up your reading, the hassle with the high-speed duplicating machines that took lots of tender, loving care to keep them running, and, of course, the way it was darn near impossible to find your place in a long tape cassette book if you wanted to go back and check out a specific reference. DAISY takes care of that stuff quite nicely, thank you very much. With no moving parts and a DAISY digital cartridge, there's no tape to stretch, break, or wrap itself around a capstan. A single cartridge can hold many books, so you can safely throw those old shoeboxes in the recycling bin. And of course, it's easy to locate specific parts of a book using the NLS Player's talking navigation system. So what's not to like about it? Well, the truth of the matter is that every technology comes with its problems. The well-understood analog cassette tape system had lots of mechanical failure points, both in recording and playback. If a tape broke, it was pretty obvious. The same was true if a tape ran short and some of the material was missed. Diagnosis of problems was straightforward, but DAISY is different. It's much more complex depending on firmware, computer code, to control the NLS player functions. The cartridges contain digitally produced books. How many thousands and thousands of lines of computer code must execute perfectly to make the sound come out of the speaker? Plenty, that's how many. And the thing with DAISY digital talking book audio is that for all of its complexity, it is highly reliable. But like other digital media, it generally either works perfectly or it does not work at all. There is not a lot of in-between with digital. When we decided to finally take the plunge into DAISY with all of our Handy Ham audio, it was only the beginning of a long process. Even though we've had several years of DAISY production experience, there are still audio files that remain unconverted to the new format. Partly, it is a matter of time and whether or not the files are readily available to our members in another format. MP3 audio, for example, is perfectly fine in most circumstances. DAISY players can play it, and there may not even be any real advantage in doing a conversion. On the other hand, I've learned a lot about audio production over the years, and by placing myself into the role of a consumer of audio rather than only a producer, I've gotten some insight as to what could be done better. There are two ways I've done this kind of learning. Number one, listening to what our members tell me, and number two, using our own website long after I've posted the audio, only to find out that the way I arranged it or described what it's about is confusing. The first method is essential, since I don't myself have an NLS player, and I have to learn from actual users about their experiences with our Handy Ham DAISY books. The second is both amusing and a bit humbling, since it reveals that at some point in the past, I'd laid out something on the website that was complicated and confusing or just plain wrong. In any case, corrections must be made. Often I find out about problems from users. That has been the case lately when a number of NLS cartridge users have reported missing books or cartridge errors. Now this is where the digital system has its weak point, brittleness due to complexity. A problem shows up and not everybody reports the same result. But hey, I know something must be up, so where to look? Is it the software? The hardware? How about a user error? Or maybe it's a production error. With a cassette tape that failed, of course, it was usually obvious what had happened. Pretty much anyone could tell when the tape tangled up or broke. Well, that is not the case with digital. It could be any of many things, and because it's complex, the cause is usually not obvious. The detective work begins. Okay, so here's what I knew. First, some users reported cartridge errors. Second, some users could read all books, but only up to a certain book, and then couldn't read any further. Third, most times there were no reports of problems at all. And fourth, the June 2014 Daisy Digest produced more error reports than the others. One user reported that QST was blank. The possibilities I had to consider were defective hardware, user error, or production problems. I know that the NLS players can sometimes return cartridge errors for a variety of reasons, including user errors or incompatible USB memory. I found out these things by researching on the web. User error seemed unlikely when it was happening to multiple users, since after all, the players are designed to be easy to use in the first place, and most of our HandyHam members are smarter than the average user about technology. Incompatibility didn't seem likely because we're talking about NLS cartridges here, not just any old USB sticks. It would be inconceivable that a vendor of NLS cartridges would choose incompatible USB memory to use in the NLS cartridge format. Of course, hardware can fail and become incompatible, but since solid-state memory has no moving parts, it is generally quite reliable, and the odds of multiple failures in the same month do seem vanishingly tiny. That left production problems, and I'd been suspicious about this as a possible cause for several months when unexplained errors cropped up. But what could be the cause? Was it my production tool, Obi? Was it the Daisy format that I chose? What else could it possibly be? I had tested all of the books in AMI, the open-source Daisy reader for Windows, and everything worked fine. It was a real head-scratcher. A break came when I decided to try producing Daisy 2.02 format books instead of Daisy 3.0 using Obi. Now, my thinking was that maybe the 3.0 format was not compatible with the firmware version of some of the NLS players. You see how complicated this gets? But when the June Digest went out, error messages still appeared. So it wasn't the Daisy version. I had to continue looking. When one of the users reported that QST was blank, I decided to examine the Daisy files for that particular book. Another member told me his cartridge didn't work and had returned it promptly, so I took a look at the files on it. The file structure looked good and the cartridge was totally readable in Windows Explorer. AMI played the files without a hitch. Even the QST Digest files played fine, but then I got a hunch. What about the file names? Somewhere in my research, I'd recalled reading about file name compatibility. I had not, in spite of many searches, been able to locate a specific file naming standard, though. But one thing for sure about the directories containing the defective books was that they all seemed to have at least one really long file name. Perhaps the problem lay in the long file names, which somehow could not be handled by the NLS player, but which might be handled by other hardware or software. Or maybe there were illegal characters in the file names that halted playback. I was reading on the Daisypedia website and found an article about using the Daisy pipeline. A function available in the pipeline is the FileSet Renamer, which turned out to be a feature that could rename the files in a Daisy book to assure that there were no illegal characters. And get this, limit the file name to 60 characters. Bingo, that just might be the problem. It is difficult to estimate file name lengths by eyeballing them in a Windows directory, so I got my reading glasses and a scrap of paper with a straight edge so that I could count off the file name characters in the longest file, character by character. Sure enough, I got to 60, and there were still 20 plus to go. So, some of the file names were too long. My next step is to shorten them up and resend the cartridge to a couple of users for confirmation that the files are readable. If the file names did indeed cause the problem, well, then we'll know better next time and produce a more reliable Daisy Digest. What's the takeaway from this? For me, it really brings home the downside of complex systems. They may be necessary to do what we demand of our technology today, but when things go awry, finding the problem can be one of those needle-in-the-haystack deals. A big thank you to WA0CAF for helping me diagnose the problem. For Handy Ham World, I'm Pat Tice, WA0TDA. Now turning to the bulletins, the July QST is out. The July 2014 QST, the ARRL Centennial issue, has been published online for ARRL members. Information on QST and ARRL membership is at arrl.org/QST. And speaking of ARRL, there's an ARRL bulletin that just came out entitled FCC OKs Changes to Amateur Radio Exam Credit, Test Administration, and Emission Type Rules. This is a big one, folks. It says, in a wide-ranging report and order released June 9th that takes various proceedings into consideration, the FCC has revised the Amateur Service Part 97 rules to grant credit for written examination elements 3, that's the general, and 4, the amateur extra, to holders of, quote, expired licenses that required passage of those elements, unquote. The FCC will require former licensees, those falling outside the 2-year grace period, to pass Element 2, that's the technician, of course, in order to be relicensed. The Commission declined to give examination credit to the holder of an expired CSCE, that's a Certificate of Successful Completion of Examination, or to extend its validity to the holder's lifetime. The report and order may be found on the web in PDF format. The link is in your weekly e-letter, or simply go to arrl.org and look at the news stories and find this one about the FCC report and order. NASA Science News for June 10th. NASA and NOAA agree. Solar Max has arrived, but this Mini Max is not like any other solar maximum of the space age. What's that about? Take a look at the ScienceCast video. It's on YouTube and the link is in your weekly e-letter. Or read the full story at nasa.gov, science.nasa.gov. The link is in your weekly e-letter. Remember that the 2014 Radio Camp is Saturday, August 16th through Saturday, August 23rd, and the equipment program will be at Radio Camp. That means that campers will be able to take home equipment provided that the equipment program has it available. Campers should let us know what they need to get on the air. Some of the equipment that can be made available to you to take home from camp are Morse code training compact discs, we've just added that one, VHF-UHF radios, HF radios, accessories like speakers and tuners, Morse code accessories, and, of course, other accessories. Please let me know what you need. Turning to a dip in the pool, it's time to take a dip in the extra class pool, and we go to question E6A17, which asks, what are the names of the three terminals of a field effect transistor? Again, what are the names of the three terminals of a field effect transistor? Possible answers are A, gate 1, gate 2, and drain. B, emitter, base, collector. C, emitter, base 1, base 2. Or D, gate, drain, source. This is one of those questions that offers a bit of a teaching moment. The traditional bipolar transistor's three terminals are emitter, base, collector. When the base-emitter junction is forward biased, collector current will be larger than the current through the base, and you can make the larger current flow in proportion to the smaller current flow in the base circuit. Signal in equals big signal out. The FET, or field effect transistor, is a bit different. Its terminals are called gate, drain, and source. So answer D is the correct one. Instead of being controlled by current, a quote-unquote field effect of voltage controls the device, hence the name field effect transistor. Charge carriers enter through the source, makes sense, and leave through the drain, which also makes sense. In between, they are controlled by a resistance that depends on the charge of the gate. Thus, you can put a signal, voltage, let's say, on the gate and have it control the flow of electrons through the device. A FET, or field effect transistor, has a high input impedance compared to a traditional bipolar transistor. Well, are you traveling by air? How does cabin air pressure in flight compare to being at different ground elevations? This came up recently when I spoke with another ham radio operator who occasionally used supplemental oxygen because of a health condition. Both of us were wondering what the equivalent cabin pressure in a jetliner might be when flying at altitude, since this could make less oxygen available in the reduced pressure of the cabin during a long flight. I found the World Health Organization website resource that answers this very question. The link is in your weekly e-letter. And of course, you should always check with your doctor for advice if you do plan to travel and you need to use oxygen. Turning to practical radio, Morse code, maybe it's time. Your RST-579 in Texas. That's what I copied right off the bat after tuning from the nearly dead phone portion of the 20-meter band down to the relatively active CW portion early this morning. That particular QSO was happening on 14.030 MHz. It reminds me that the code, although no longer a requirement for licensing, is still quite an active mode, and a good one, that can net you a lot of contacts. Although it used to be said that code would get through when no other mode could, that is no longer the case as robust digital modes have come into use. Still, code does indeed best single sideband easily when the bands are crowded or conditions are marginal. CW, continuous wave, is also used as a term that is almost interchangeable with Morse code. CW requires nothing more than a code key plugged into your transceiver, unlike digital modes that require computers and keyboards. There's nothing quite like a tiny, complete, battery-operated station with a built-in CW keyer and a code key to provide you with HF capability that is so portable that you can put everything into a backpack. It's a well-known fact that working DX, distant stations typically outside your country's borders, is often easier using CW than single sideband. If you want to be a competitive DXer, a knowledge of Morse code is a must. Even if you don't plan to be that competitive, wouldn't it be nice to know what those Morse code announcements on the local repeater systems are saying? And wouldn't it be fun to learn the code and participate in a slow speed net once in a while? Sure it would, and you can do it. Recently, we were contacted by the FIST's Morse Code Club with a proposal. As a way to help boost Morse Code participation among Handy Ham members, a FIST's membership would be made available to Handy Ham members as long as they kept their Handy Ham memberships current. In addition, FIST's provided us with a compact disc Morse Code course by K7QO, which we are pleased to be able to offer to our radio campers this summer. Now, we think this is a really good deal and a great way to promote a healthy learning activity among our members. If you are a Handy Ham member and are interested, please contact Nancy in our office and get on the list. We are working on a process to share membership status. Only Handy Ham members who request to participate will be considered for a FISTS membership. To protect your privacy, you must have a written release on file with us. This is Practical Radio, so let's learn some code this summer. Handy Ham Nets are on the air daily. Summertime, of course, is a very busy season for all of us, and that means our net control volunteers as well. If we can't fill a net control position this summer, please feel free to step up and start a roundtable conversation. Just this week, I heard from a prospective new member who heard the Sunday roundtable. She said that getting into the weekday net was not practical for her because of her work. Now, I think that's true for a lot of us who may be working weekdays and might just find the evening and weekend sessions to be easier to join. Listen tonight for the Handy Ham Wednesday Evening Net and try to answer the N6NFF trivia question during the first half hour. Check in later just to get in the log and say hello. The trivia question is revealed shortly after the first half hour, the answer that is, and if you're up to a challenge, see if you can correctly answer this week's question. Turning to this week at headquarters, reading online, you'll find the weekly e-letter online to be mobile-friendly if you use the following link, handyham.org/local/blind/this_week.htm, or try that link from your weekly e-letter. See if it shows up better in your mobile device. Email has changed. Our new email addresses are nancy.maydell@alina.com and patrick.tice@alina.com. You'll find both in our weekly e-letter. In the digests and lectures, just a reminder, in some of them you may hear the old contact information that we have, our old phone numbers and old email addresses, and that's in previously recorded audio lectures or digests. So please disregard old contact information and use our new email addresses and phone numbers. Similarly, some of the old audio podcasts and the old HTML e-letters also have this outdated information. Just disregard it and be sure to use the latest email addresses and phone numbers. In the June 2014 production news, the June NLS cartridges are in the mail, and I have heard from several NLS cartridge users that our June digest also had a cartridge error. Now, we're confident of the cause, the file naming problem. The QST Daisy book had the problem and may either not play at all or lock the player, so you have to remove the cartridge. For those who could not play the June issue, you can either get QST from the Library of Congress version or wait until we send out the July digest, which will have a new working copy of the June QST digest. The June 2014 QST digest in DAISY for our blind members has been redone. It is now available in the members section as a downloadable DAISY file created this morning with compliant file names. So if you have downloaded this same file before, please delete it and re-download the new file, which should work just fine. We do apologize for the inconvenience. In the remote base news, we still do have some problems with W0EQO, but W0ZSW has been working fine and it is online 24/7. That's it for this week, folks. Be sure to send Nancy your changes of address, phone number changes, or email address changes so we can continue to stay in touch with you. All of the contact information is in your weekly e-letter. And don't forget about our friends at ARRL. ARRL is the premier organization supporting amateur radio worldwide. If you like, you can contact Handy Hams for help in joining ARRL, and we'll be happy to help you fill out the paperwork or navigate through the process. The weekly e-letter is a compilation of software tips, operating information, and Handy Ham news. It is published on Wednesdays and is available to everyone free of charge. You can email me, patrick.tice, and Tice is T-I-C-E, at Alina, ALLINA.com, for changes of address, unsubscribes, and so forth. Include your old email address and your new address, and we'll get things changed for you. So from Handy Ham World, this is Pat Tice, WA0TDA, saying 73, and I hope to hear you on the air soon.